This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. Terry Gross and Fresh Air celebrate 25 years on the air this September. Over the years, she's conducted some 5,000 interviews. She's talked to politicians, journalists, writers, doctors, celebrities. But Fresh Air is a talk show and more. Think about the concerts, the performers we meet for the first time, as well as the performers we've been acquainted with for some time. And then there's the series of programs on American popular song. Also part of the program, reviews of music, film, television, books. Fresh Air is highly regarded by critics. The San Francisco Chronicle wrote of Terry Gross's interviews, a remarkable blend of empathy and warmth, genuine curiosity, and sharp intelligence. Terry Gross is host and executive producer. She's been with the program since its inception at WHYY in 1975. Listeners, I welcome your questions for Terry Gross this afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Anywhere else, toll free, 1-800-222-9455. Terry Gross, good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi, and thank you for that nice introduction.
Oh, well, thank you for joining us this afternoon. 1975, what was the first show like?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, the first day I came to the station, it was Labor Day. So my first show was the day after Labor Day. So people were just getting back from a holiday. It was an incredibly slow show. And it was a three-hour live show.
Wow.
So I don't remember who I booked that day, but I remember frantically going to through the newspapers and just calling people and saying, how would you like to join me by phone? I think I called a rodeo in New Jersey and like a local politician, and I don't remember who else.
Wow. And so you were producing and hosting and...
Yeah, I was the only full-time staff member on the show. There were a couple of volunteers who were helping me do a little bit of the booking and, you know, a little bit of stuff like that, but mostly it was me. It meant booking the show, meeting the guests at the door, showing them where the ladies' room or the men's room was, getting them a cup of coffee, interviewing them, calling them a taxi. So while I was doing all the showing them to the bathroom kind of stuff, I'd play a lot of recordings, mostly jazz recordings.
You know, I really enjoy the concert programs that you do, the music programs. It's clear you're a big music fan.
True.
Yeah. Have you studied music?
I have played my share of instruments badly. Yeah. You know, I had the requisite piano lessons as a kid in junior high. No, I say in high school, I played French horn. In college, I was in the marching band my first year. And then when I was around 26, I started playing clarinet because I heard this Eric Dolphy record where he played clarinet, which he rarely did. And I just fell in love with the instrument and thought, oh, God, I have to inhabit the sound. But I didn't last at that too long because I realized I had was spending more time getting to and from my lesson than I had time to practice during the week.
Hmm. What was the genesis of the series on American popular song?
Well, we decided to do a special series and to ask for underwriting for it, and we racked our brains, you know, what would we really like to do? What, you know, that we need funding to do that we can't just do on our own. And it was actually Danny Miller, co-executive producer of the show, who said, well, how about a series on great songwriters? Because, you know, he loves music, I love music, and we were both going to be working really intensively on the series. And, you know, I immediately thought, that's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Do you have music going in the background when you're working? No.
I like music to be in the foreground. Oh. When music's on, I want to be listening to it. And if it's going to be in the background, I feel like it's more of a distraction than anything else. I mean, the only exception to that is like Saturday mornings when my husband and I have breakfast, we'll usually put on, he spends a lot of time in used record stores, and either I've gotten a record in during the week or he's bought a record during the week that we both really want to hear. So we'll put that on Saturday mornings, and it's not exactly in the foreground because we're eating and we're also talking with each other, but that's the most background it ever takes.
Yeah. What have you been listening to lately?
What have I been listening to lately? Let me see. Jerry Southern, who's a great singer from the 1950s. I've been listening to the cast recording of The Music Man because I just saw the show last weekend and interviewed the two principals from it. And it's a show that I never really thought much of. I never really liked the score. And as soon as I put on the cast recording, I thought this sounds really good. I like the performers on it very very much. Let me see, what else have I been listening to? I also had to listen to a record for somebody I interviewed, Shelby Lynn, who's a rock country singer-songwriter. But I mostly listen to jazz singers.
Yeah.
People like Abby Lincoln, Ella Fitzgerald, mm-hmm. Lee Wiley, Maxine Sullivan, early Carmen McRae, and a lot of Broadway music.
Mm. Now, the guests that you have on the program that are musicians, singers, songwriters, how do you decide who you'd like to invite onto the program?
Well, first of all, the producers of the show always pass on music that they've become interested in, either a CD that came in the mail that they listened to that they thought is really interesting, or somebody who they saw at one of the clubs. The producers of the show tend to get to clubs a lot more than I do. And then I just do a lot of listening on my own, and if somebody who is still alive catches my attention. I see, unfortunately, a lot of the music fortunately for me as a listener, but unfortunately for the show, a lot of the music I personally listen to mm-hmm. is of jazz musicians and singers who are dead.
Mm.
So there's not much I can do in terms of interviewing them on the air, which is, by the way, one of the reasons why I love the American Popular Song series, because it was a way of doing great shows about mm-hmm. About great songwriters who are no longer here to be interviewed.
Yeah, you must love it too when books come out, new biographies come out about the lives of past great musicians or musicians, artists who are no longer with us.
But, yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's talk with some listeners who are waiting to talk with us on the phone this afternoon. First, let's go to a caller in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hello. Terry, I just have to say how much I love your work. Try to listen to it as often as I can while I'm working. But I'm especially curious, and Celeste has already hinted at this a little bit, about how you go about deciding on who you're going to interview. Talked about that in terms of music, but you interview such a broad number of people. I'd be very curious to know that, and I'll just say thank you very much for the show, and I'll hang up and listen.
Well, thank you. The process of deciding who's going to be on the show is a very imprecise, fuzzy, ambiguous process of decision making. What happens is this: Thursday nights, we do an archive show every Friday, so Thursday nights I don't have to prepare for new interviews for Friday. So what I do instead is I take home materials given to me by the two interview producers for the show. I take home usually about two mail crates of books, CDs, videos, press releases, manuscripts, stuff like that. And these are things from the people who the producers feel should be finalists for consideration as guests. I go through those materials and try to formulate an opinion about whether they're interesting and whether they're worthy of our listeners' time in an interview format. This is very difficult to decide. For example, with a book might be very interesting, but the author might not be a very interesting speaker. Or a book might not be all that interesting, but it might turn out that the author is much more interesting themselves than their book is. And so you're kind of reading between the lines, trying to figure all of this out. If I listen to a new CD by somebody who I really like or who one of the producers has recommended to me, I'm not only considering them as a songwriter or musician or singer, I'm asking myself, are there things that they have to say that you will want to hear? Are there questions I have of them? Have they lived an interesting life? Or do they have insights into the craft of songwriting or the process of singing? Or do they have really interesting opinions about music? Is there something there that I can really pursue as an interviewer with some confidence that there'll be an interesting conversation? Because finally, we're not just presenting the CD, we're presenting the conversation. So because this is such an imprecise process. I'll often ask the producers to call one of the guests and talk to them beforehand just to see how well they speak and if they have things to say as an interviewee. Sometimes one of the producers will do a pre-interview. But one of the frustrations for me, and I know for the producers as well, is that although we really devote our lives to doing this, there's so much to cover now. With the explosion of the internet and small magazines and independent filmmaking and indie records, there is so much more pop culture out there than there's ever been in the history of mankind, and it's just virtually impossible to keep up with everything. So you devote your life to doing it, and yet you always feel that you're giving people short shrift. So that's a really big frustration.
Yeah. What do you know about your audience, and does that affect the topics that you select?
Well, the audience is... notice that silence? I'll be honest with you. I don't really study the demographics, though my guess is that our audience is largely in their 30s on up, although I know we have a lot of listeners in their 20s, but I think there's probably more people in their 30s on up than in their 20s. Though I'd like there to be more listeners in their 20s as well. However, the way we decide who should be on the show has more to do with who we genuinely feel has talent and has something to say than it has to do with second-guessing who the audience might listen to, might be most interested in. Only because, A, it's hard to guess what somebody else will like, and B, that... we considered our jobs to make editorial decisions based on our best ability to judge quality and who's interesting. And, you know, you use your instincts are the best things that you have to make these kinds of decisions. So, you know, hopefully you can trust them. On the other hand, if somebody's like really popular, they might not be my favorite actor or whatever, I might say, sure, have them on. On the other hand, I might not say, let's not. I might say, they're really popular, but they strike me as being kind of vapid, and I doubt that they have much to say. I doubt they'd be very forthcoming. So why don't we just skip it? They'll have plenty of attention in other places.
Yeah. Do you ever run across folks who have been interviewed too often and they get stale?
Yes. In fact, one author once said to me that when he's on the road too much, he starts to feel like a human cassette machine. Where, you know, like, you want answer A? Press the button, answer A. Yeah, that's always a problem. And we try to get people, when they've written a new book, early on before they become the human cassette machine.
Yeah. Let's talk with another listener. On line two, a caller in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to thank Terry for her wonderful program, and I happened to call to answer a question then you asked after I'd called. But my daughter, who's 14, listens to this program with me, and she loves it.
Oh, great.
And, you know, for a long time I would just listen to it. It comes on here at 3 o'clock, and she'd get out of school at 3:30, so I would go and pick her up, and I'd be listening to the program, and she'd get in the truck with me, and it's just... she just loves it. She loves it. All the different the fact that it's so diverse, and it's always about something different. And I just thought that you should know that you're also reaching a younger audience too, probably.
Well, please thank her for me.
So I will. She enjoys it. Well, thanks very much for your show.
Thanks for your call.
Bye.
Bye. Let's talk with another listener on line one. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Terry, I just want to say I really appreciate your work. And I learn about people that I probably wouldn't necessarily think that I'd be interested in, I end up being quite interested in them. So I really appreciate that. I had a particular question. I heard your interview with the man who was known as the Hurricane. He was the prize fighter who was jailed.
Reuben Hurricane Carter.
Okay, I didn't remember his name. I thought that was a really interesting interview. I thought you did a good job with it. In fact, I'd like to get a transcript. I assume I can still do that.
Well, a lot of our interviews are on the internet. Do you have your radio on?
No, I don't.
Okay, I'm just hearing a lot of feedback. A lot of our interviews are on our website, which is freshair.com. And many of the interviews you could just download if you have access to that. And there's also an 800 number you could call.
Okay, thank you. I wondered how you felt about interviewing him. I think it was, my impression was that it was a difficult interview for you. In some ways, he was kind of resistant. My view was that he was kind of resistant about being understood by you, which is something I think you do very well. So I was just curious about what your feelings were about that, and I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Sure, thanks. The point of tension to which our listener refers, I think, is when I had mentioned that the people from Toronto who had worked on his defense when he was in prison accused of murder. These people had lived in a collective in Toronto, and he really took issue with the word collective, or commune. I'm sorry, I think I used the word, it was commune or collective, I forget which. And he took issue with that and started arguing with me about how I was using a really insulting word, a demeaning word, to describe them. And I said, well, that's the word that's used in your biography, your authorized biography, so I thought you wouldn't mind that word. In fact, I assumed that was the word you used. It's your book, which maybe he didn't read. But and then he still was like really upset and was, you know, seemed kind of angry with me. And I said, look, I don't mean it as an insulting word. I used to live in a collective when I was in college, you know. So a lot of listeners commented on that because they felt here was somebody who was supposed to be so completely reformed, you know, who Denzel Washington said, this man is love. And he's like getting so upset over something that seems so, you know, kind of
trivial?
Insignificant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, we wondered, should we keep this in or leave it out? And, you know, because we do a lot of editing on the show. And we decided to leave it in because we thought it was an interesting moment that you don't want to make too much of. You don't want to say it reveals more than it does. But I was surprised that, you know, he was so upset over something that seemed to me to be very minor. But you know, that's me.
Yeah.
He might have had reasons to think that that was pretty significant. I don't know.
I don't know. Well, it was really telling, I think. It tells us something about him, and I assume that's why you left it in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk with another listener on the toll-free line in Charleston. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
I don't think it's enough to say that one likes your show, Terry. I've never spoken to anybody that's listened to you that hasn't liked you, so you've got
good.
A big fan.
Thank you.
Could you talk about how you prepare for your interviews? You do such a good job.
Oh, sure. Well, thank you.
And I'll get off the line.
Okay, thanks. Well, here's what I usually do. Say I'm interviewing an author. I will read their book, but I put read in quotation marks because it's not the kind of reading I would do if I was on vacation and reading slowly for pleasure. This is more like skimming. So I will turn every page of the book, slowing down when I get to something that looks like it's going to be very relevant to the interview, speeding up when I get to the passages that look like they won't really pertain to the interview. I'm talking about nonfiction here. And then I'll circle everything in the book that I want to remember for the interview, and I'll dog-ear that page. So I'm circling most of the pages of the book. Then I'll take notes on the things I've circled. Those notes will become the basis for my interview. I will write my questions based on what those notes have to say and what thoughts they jog in my mind. Now, instead of reading a book, I might be reading a lot of newspaper and magazine articles, or I might be listening to a CD and reading biographical notes and so on, you know, taking notes all along and using those notes to write the interview on. I write out my questions, but not word for word, just thought for thought. I'll just write like a key phrase or a key thought down. I don't want to be reading my questions. I just want the questions to jog my memory. My memory isn't great. I feel like I can't rely on it. I'd much rather have things on paper so I can be confident that they're there and that therefore I'll remember to ask something. It's also nice to have an outline, a structured outline, an outline that kind of reflects a larger narrative, so that when I'm talking to somebody, no matter what tangent I go on with them, no matter where I follow them, where they lead me to, I always have a structure I can come back to if I choose to.
Mm. Is there a certain type of question you like to begin with?
I often like to begin with something simple. here's the thing. Like, sometimes, like, if an interview is live, and my interviews are pre-recorded and edited, but if an interview is live, you sometimes feel like you have to start with a very interesting question, because listeners might judge the interest level of this interview based on how interesting that first answer is. And so you'll go for something very, you know, provocative. I don't have to do that since we can edit the interviews. My first two questions might be very easy, just to kind of get the person relaxed, get them talking, get them comfortable, and then get to things that are more provocative. Also, my opening questions are usually fairly general, just to give the listener an orientation into the subject before getting too specific.
And then the interviews are taped and edited. How long are the original interviews?
The original interviews are usually a maximum of about 55 minutes. Most of the interviews are long distance. Very few people are here in the studio with me. Our listeners may or may not be aware that I'm speaking to you from a studio in Philadelphia. And most of my, I'm always in this studio in Philadelphia, and most of my guests are in a studio somewhere else, New York, Chicago, Washington, Los Angeles are some of the most common places. So we rent the studio time in 15-minute increments, and we usually rent an hour. The first few minutes are taken up just with technical stuff. The remainder of the time is the time I have to record the interview, and then we edit it down to somewhere between 15 and 40 minutes.
This is very interesting to me. You're in Philadelphia. I'm in Urbana. We're not sitting across the table from one another, but it sounds like we could be.
Exactly.
And do you find that the dynamic of an interview changes if you are in the same room with the subject?
Yeah, and well, here's what I found, and I don't know if you found this, but it seems to me that the chemistry in an interview is much more dependent on who the people are than the geography. I've been sitting across the table from people where I felt like there's never going to be any chemistry here.
Oh, my. We just lost our connection, I think, with Philadelphia, and we're going to see if we can get that back up and running. Let me remind folks that this is the Afternoon Magazine, and our guest this afternoon is Terry Gross, the host and executive producer of Fresh Air. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn, and I believe that we have the connection back. No, we don't. We're going to get back with Terry Gross in Philadelphia, as we were just talking about. She's in Philadelphia in the studios of WHYY, where Fresh Air is produced, and I'm here with you in Urbana, in the Urbana studios of WILL. So while we get this technical glitch ironed out, I would ask our two callers who are waiting to talk with Terry Gross to hang in there. And why don't we have a little music here.
Thank you.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Terry Gross is our guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. We were talking with her in... She's in Philadelphia, and I'm in Urbana, and we were talking about this very subject, and we were talking about how good the technology makes us sound, that we sound like we're sitting across the table from one another, and all of a sudden, the connection went out. But now we've got Terry back with us, I believe. Terry?
Hi, and this time I'm by phone.
You're by phone.
So it no longer sounds quite like we're sitting across the table from each other. As if by cue this happened, as if to that the technology is great, but it's not the most reliable thing in the world.
Yeah, and you know, this happens in live radio. You're lucky you're on tape.
Yeah, that is one of the benefits of being on tape, and it's one of the reasons why we do record the interviews, because these things happen with some regularity. The other reasons why we like to record is because editing is a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could edit my life.
Well, we were talking about the dynamic of the interview. If you're not in the same room with somebody, does it change the interview?
Yeah, and I was saying that I thought that chemistry had more to do with the people than with the geography, because I've been in the room with somebody, and did we lose you again?
No, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, I think maybe we're on ISDN now.
Are we?
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's try it.
Okay, so listen.
Notice that the
there we are.
Quality improved a little bit, I think, there. If what happened is what I think happened.
Yes.
Good. So, so anyways, and I've also been long distance talking to people when I felt really quite connected, even though they weren't there. One of the things I like about the long distance interview is that it's sometimes a lot easier to ask challenging questions to somebody when you're not looking them in the eye.
Mm.
On the other side of that, it's easier for the guest to walk out on you when they're not in the same room. I never, ever had anybody walk out on me when they were in the same studio that I was in, but I have had people walk out on me when they were in remote studios.
Wow. I find that if it's long distance, my powers of concentration are better. I'm listening harder.
I agree. And I know that might sound strange to listeners, but I think the reason why is it's very, when you're really trying to listen and think, it's almost distracting to look at somebody's face, in part because it means you're not looking at your notes. It means that you're not taking notes. Sometimes I just get so absorbed in looking at somebody and listening to them that I forget to be thinking.
Hmm.
And you know, you always have to, when you're interviewing somebody, you always have to be completely immersed in what somebody is saying, and yet you have to remain slightly detached from it, because you always have to be ready with your next question, with your next thought. So you're operating on several levels at the same time, and you can't lose yourself in what somebody is saying, not completely.
Yeah. Let's talk with another listener, a caller in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I would imagine it's kind of takes a lot of work and talent to get to the point where you can maintain that connection disconnection at the same time. I've been listening to you for several years. I don't know exactly how long WILL has been broadcasting your show, but it's been quite a while here, and I'm always amazed at your ability to establish and maintain rapport with your guests. Now, maybe some of that is editing, and I don't know how much you move stuff around from beginning to end and that sort of thing as well. But really, I mean, in over the years, I can only think of a couple of times that stand out in my mind where you had rapport problems. Besides the Hurricane Carter one, an interview you did with Frank Zappa.
Oh, yeah, that's a good example.
Other than that, I can't remember any. Not that they weren't there, but they just, they don't stand out in my mind. Some of the questions I did have were about the editing and the preparation, but you kind of have gone over some of those already. But do you tend to, move the position?
Restructure the questions?
Yeah.
Not a lot. I mean, sometimes we have to. Sometimes an interview ends up just being too disorganized. But usually, I think the structure is pretty well preserved, more or less. But the dead ends are edited out, the boring parts, pertaining to my questions and to answers. We just boil it down to its most interesting and essential parts. Is your radio on? Because I'm hearing an echo.
It's on low in the background.
Okay.
Shield it a little bit. You said in the beginning you did like a three-hour show. So has the format of your show changed a lot over the years?
Yeah, it sure did. When the show was live and 3 hours, 5 days a week, what we would do is have live guests in the studio. And in between interviews, we'd play sets of music, usually jazz recordings. And most of the guests were local. And because there was no transportation budget, the guests who we could have on the show were the people who other institutions were bringing into town. If the museum brought somebody in, if one of the theaters or a club brought somebody in, then they could be our guest. But we couldn't bring anybody in ourselves. One of the real advantages when the show went national is because we did have this long-distance technology, satellite and ISDN, we could talk to anybody in the country and just have them go to their closest NPR bureau or affiliate station and be able to speak with them. So that's been an enormous help.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk with another listener. On line two, a listener in Taylorville. Good afternoon.
Yeah, hi. Hi, I think your show is one of the nicest things on public radio, but I do have a few quibbles. I'm afraid I've always got quibbles. I'm a perfectionist, like a lot of other self-preoccupied people. But I'm preoccupied with a bunch of things. I think it has a great deal to do with budgetary constraints. I know European radio, for example, in France, I think they spend something like 100 times, or maybe it's more nearer to 200 times per capita, what we spend in this country on the public media. So they're able to be adventurous, and they don't have to pander to the lowest common denominator, which sometimes even the best shows do. I was hoping you could. Incidentally, before I get to a few of my obsessions and suggestions, I thought the two segments you had Wednesday were quite special, and I was wondering if there was any chance you were ever going to do that program again on that vocal sextet from Nazi Germany, that interracial group of male singers. That was one of your
The Comedian Harmonists?
Huh?
The Comedian Harmonists?
Yeah, right. I remember that one melody from when I was a kid. I wasn't even 10 years old. I heard it somewhere. It must have been on the radio. Uh-huh. Back in the latter years of the Second World War. I'm dating myself.
Well, why don't you tell me your quibbles?
I think you pander too much to the lowest common denominator. For example, you had this rock fellow on. He was some kind of producer, I think. He kept saying, you know, I was trying to keep up with how many you knows. I think it was something on the order of about 150 every half hour. And it didn't seem to me he had all that much to say. I think a good deal of popular music deserves to be neglected, and unfortunately I'm afraid that what's happening with the public media is that that the tighter the budgets, the more they appeal.
I'm going to stop you right there. Now, you probably don't listen to pop music or rock and roll, and therefore you're assuming that if we do something on it, we're pandering. But the truth is we do listen to it, and we like it. And the people we have on because we like them. So I would disagree with you that it's pandering. I mean, I think that's us doing what I said we try to do, which is choose people who we think are talented. Now, your taste and our taste might be different, and I respect everybody's taste. I mean, you like what you like. I like what I like. Our listeners like what they like, but again, we're not, if we have on like a pop singer or a rock and roll producer or something, it's not because we're pandering, it's because we think they're talented.
Mm-hmm. And the caller raised the issue of resources.
Well, it has nothing to do with money if we have on somebody in rock. I mean, it's not like we're just trying to cater to the least common denominator. It's that we think they're worthy of being on the show, so we're having them on. It's just not a money related decision.
Yeah, I wonder if money is an issue for the show in terms of you can do.
Money's always an issue. Yeah, in the sense that, you know, we have a staff that by some people's standards might seem kind of large. We're about 8 people. But really, for a show that has, you know, one or two interviews every day that's edited, and we try to keep up with issues in the news as well as all of pop culture, we feel we could really use another producer so that we could do a better job in feeling confident that we're covering the issues and the arts that deserve to be covered. But we don't have the money for that. So, you know, we can't do that. We could do more concerts and more labor-intensive things if we had more time. We could take the show on the road if we had more money and things like that. But we don't. And you know, I think we get by in what we do have. And I think one of the challenges of doing a radio show is using the resources that you do have as creatively as you can use them. And creativity finally doesn't depend solely on money. Do you know what I mean? You make the most of what you have. And I think we have a decent budget and a decent-sized staff, and we do the best with it that we can.
Well, you do very good work.
Thanks.
Let's talk with another caller. On the campus of the University of Illinois, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I enjoyed the show, too.
Okay.
I just wanted to say two questions. I think part of it is that your voice makes you sound rather delicate and vulnerable, which makes me wonder if any of your shows have ever taken a big emotional toll on you, A. And then B, I was just curious, kind of on this money angle, if you've ever testified in front of Congress in favor of public broadcasting and what your impression of Congress was. And I'll hang up. Thank you.
Thanks. I haven't testified in front of Congress. I really don't think that kind of presentation is my strong suit. There's people far better suited to that kind of argument than I would be. In terms of the emotional toll that the show has taken on me, it's not any one interview that takes an emotional toll. It's the emotional toll of spending your life preparing for interviews and working on the show. It's a very demanding show. And in order to produce a show that's worthy of your time as a listener, we have to work really hard, and I have to spend, you know, I basically work all day with a few minutes out for dinner, you know, and I come home and I just like work till I go to sleep. And I do that every night except Saturday. But that's what it takes to do a good show. So that's what I do. And that's where the toll comes in. It's not the toll of listening to people telling me emotional things. It's the toll of just working a lot and wishing that there was more time for sleep.
Yeah. Do you ever tire of the program? I mean, doing it. It's so demanding.
It is very demanding. But the good thing is every time I think that I'm getting really burned out, we'll end up having on a guest who's just so interesting and so inspiring that I feel really lucky to be doing the show. And I can use that as fuel for some time afterwards.
Mm. Let's talk with another caller. On line one in Champaign. Hi.
Hi. I listen to your show a lot, and I greatly enjoy it, especially your interviews with jazz musicians rock musicians.
Great.
And I've often wondered, well, I have two questions, for our sake. Okay, I've often wondered if you play an instrument yourself, or if you, in your other life, had been in music, because you seem to be really, no pun intended, tune in to musicians especially and other artists.
Well, I listen to a lot of music. You missed the part, I guess, where I described the instruments that I played badly in my time.
Yes, I did.
there were several of them. But mostly what I am is a listener. And listening to music gives me enormous pleasure, and so does talking to people about music.
It shows. And I want to say that I disagree with the man from Taylorville. My children like rock. I really love jazz myself. But one of the interviews you did that most impressed me was the one with Marilyn Manson.
Oh.
Because I had read so much negative stuff about him in the media, and you treated him like a real person and brought out some qualities of, and he kind of stated his mission.
Thanks. I liked that interview, too, because I thought he was really smart and very self-aware and very willing to just talk about stuff. And it was very emotionally accessible in that respect. And I thought that, you know, there are certain rock stars who have this real I'm hipper than you are kind of attitude and who really condescend to me as an interviewer and to our audience. It's mostly like the mega stars who are like that, or, you know, the people who just are so self-absorbed. But he wasn't like that at all. I thought he was, you know, pretty straightforward and, you know, really interesting. So thank you for saying that.
Well, thanks. I enjoy your show. Bye-bye.
Our next caller is on line 2 in Champaign. Hi.
Hi. It's great to be able to speak with Terry. I'm a big fan.
Thank you.
And I could say one of my favorite shows was the one with, I think, Ray Manzarek from The Doors.
Uh-huh.
That was such a well-produced show, or maybe somehow it just came off spontaneously that way. But it was just amazing to listen to him, like, explain how they composed Light My Fire. It was just great. The other thing I want to say is I wish you had more contemporary artists, visual artists.
Yeah.
And I know it's probably a tough thing to get on the radio, but I think yours would be a great outlet for a lot of people trying to explain what they're doing.
Yeah, it's a frustration of mine because I feel like in some ways we really should be having on more visual artists. But if I'm talking to an artist whose work isn't well known, I find it very difficult knowing that the audience won't be familiar with the work. It seems so abstract to talk about it without anyone knowing what you're talking about. I can have a writer read from their work. I could play somebody's CD, but I can't show the painting. And I don't think I'm particularly good at describing a painting or describing a sculpture, good enough to have it really form a vision in the mind of a listener. So I think that's one of the obstacles for me in doing more on the visual arts.
Well, you know, sometimes the artist can do that.
Sometimes they can, but sometimes they can't particularly.
Yeah. Well, it's a great show.
Thank you very much. Are you an artist yourself?
failed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. We're almost out of time. I wanted to ask you, Terry, let's say you're getting ready for vacation. Are you going to do any reading on vacation? And if you're going on vacation, what kind of books might you take with you?
Good question. I've just been starting to think about that. I usually have two different modes that I operate in for vacation reading. One mode is reading dead authors so that I won't be thinking in the back of my mind what the interview will be about. And the other is to read like hard-boiled detective novels, sometimes by favorite writers who I've already interviewed and sometimes by new writers. So I'll probably take a couple of new detective writers with me this time around.
Yeah. Do you read books for work, preparing for the program, that you go back to or just leave it?
Well, one of the frustrations is once I've read something for the show, even if I haven't read it carefully, I feel like I've used it up in some way,
yeah.
And I've done the interview, and if I read it, and then if I reread the book and I notice things that I didn't notice the first time around and didn't ask the author about, I'll just feel awful. So I almost feel like I have to avoid the book after that. As terrible as that sounds, it's the kind of gut reaction I have. I can't go back.
Yeah.
Other books that I haven't done interviews about, I will reread a second time or even a third time.
Well, happy reading, and have a great vacation.
Oh, thanks, and thank you very much for having me on your show.
My pleasure.
It was a pleasure to talk with you and with your listeners. Thank you.
You are so welcome. Terry Gross has been our guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine.